You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here. About a week or two ago, I got an email from a marketer, an affiliate marketer, who was promoting some launch of some new software product. And the email was hilarious. It basically said, you need to buy this thing, but if you click the link and you go to the website, you're going to be totally confused. And that's because they've done a horrible job of writing this sales letter. It's filled with industry jargon. It's filled with tech speak that you're not going to understand. But trust me, I've gotten the software. I know how valuable it is. If only these guys were better at writing copy that spoke to their audience, they'd do a better job actually selling this. But you should buy it anyway. So click here, ignore everything on the webpage, scroll to the bottom, and buy. Now, I thought that was a hilarious email, but it actually brought up an incredibly valid point, which is that a lot of businesses think that they're doing a great job at communicating their value, the ideas behind what it is that they have to offer their audience. But in reality, the audience just does not get it. Well, today we're going to be talking to somebody who knows this space incredibly well. Rachel Foster is a copywriter and helps businesses, specifically in the tech and software B2B space, find the right language to talk to their audience in a way that their audience is actually going to understand. Hey, Rachel, welcome.
Hi, thanks for inviting me onto the show.
Absolutely. So I don't know if you've ever experienced that type of, you know, overt introduction to a piece of marketing copy the way that I just described, but I imagine that you see a lot of copy out there that is similar in its description to what I just talked about.
Yeah, definitely. It's coming into my inbox, you know, almost every day.
So what I think, you know, we're talking about today is finding ways to utilize language that is appropriate for the audience that is being marketed to. And I think we're going to talk specifically about the space that you're working on, which is B2B tech, B2B software, SaaS products. But I think it's also incredibly applicable to pretty much any industry out there. I was telling you before we hit record that I've seen this with financial advisors, with life and business coaches, et cetera. So I'm curious if you could sort of paint the picture of what you see out there as sort of the typical fail when it comes to how B2B tech companies tend to represent themselves and what are the things that they are doing that are wrong. And then we'll move in a couple of minutes to how to fix it.
Yeah, sure. So this doesn't just apply to B2B tech. I think this is pretty much all B2B, but a lot of B2B companies, they think that they're speaking to one type of buyer. Like maybe it's the person who's going to know a lot about how their product works, usually the tech person, but there's actually a lot of different people from a lot of different areas involved in this buying process. And I believe that Gartner found that there's 10 people, 10 decision makers involved in every B2B sale. Mm. And so that could range from the IT person to the CEO to the finance person to procurement. So you're having all these different people come in, and only a small percentage of them are going to understand all the nitty-gritty technical stuff. And if you're throwing out all these technical features and functions at them, you know, they're just not going to be interested, because the CEO and the other business buyers, they want to know how your, you know, solution is going to solve their business challenges, how it's going to help them drive revenue or cut cost or make people more productive. And if you're not speaking to that, they're just going to tune out.
I love the fact that was the very first thing you brought up, because this is a very common conversation that we have with businesses who are selling to other businesses is that if you speak the language of, in our case, we talk a lot about the importance of speaking the language of finance, regardless of what you're selling, you're going to have a more effective time actually making the sale, because that decision maker, the purse holder, is understanding the value of what it is that you're trying to sell.
Yeah, it's always going to go past finance and procurement. So you need to address their concerns as well.
So, okay. So understanding that there's a whole bunch of stakeholders out there and you have to speak to all of them in a way that's going to impact their thinking about what it is you're trying to sell. What are the other mistakes that then you see on a lot of marketing materials, websites and brochures and white papers and what have you?
I think another trend that's happening in the industry right now, and this was going on for a long time before COVID, but then during COVID, you know, when people started working from home, and it really kind of accelerated after that. And it's that B2B buyers are spending even more time than before doing research on their own before they reach out to a salesperson. So you may think that you put a little something on your website and then they're going to contact your sales team. But the Gartner study found that B2B buyers only spend like 17% of their time meeting with potential suppliers. And if they're comparing multiple vendors, then they spend even less time, like maybe just like 5 to 6% of their time talking with a vendor. So if your copy isn't, you know, your copy, in a sense, it's your sales rep, and it needs to do that heavy lifting to give people the information they need so that when they do reach out to somebody, they're going to reach out to you.
Okay, this is a deeper conversation on this particular topic that I want to have in a moment, but it sounds like what you've just described here is speaking to the copy needs to talk to somebody at a different level of the buyer's journey, perhaps, than we might have in the past. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. So you want to speak to the people who are doing the early stage research, and you want to have that content that educates them in a very engaging way and speak their language. And then as you move through the sales cycle, you want to consider who is going to be involved at each stage and make sure that their needs are addressed.
So how would that play out? I'm thinking as I'm hearing this, that somebody who is doing initial research may not even know that they're looking for a particular product. And so it's like, do you have this problem? Well, one of the ways to solve it is with widgets. We happen to make widgets, and here's where you can learn more. And obviously then there's the people who are looking for widgets and know what they do. And so how do you address that in content?
Yeah, so it's you have to do a bit of deep diving, and you have to like look at and consider, like, when somebody comes to your website, you have to try to figure out in general, how much do they already know about you? Like, do they know nothing and they're just starting to research their challenges? And if so, you might want to have like some blog posts and some eBooks and some like content like that, that educates them about their challenges. And then, but if they land on, you know, your product or service page, they're at least looking for your product or service. So you could go more into the features and benefits there.
So one of the things that you shared with me prior to us getting together for this conversation is this term tech talk. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's really, as I said earlier, applicable to any industry. It's just their jargon for their industry. But I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what tech talk is. And in advance of our call today, I jumped online. I was looking at various websites, looking for examples of this. And first, I was pleased to discover that there's a lot less of it than I was expecting to discover. But I did find one giant enterprise software company that whose name includes the letters A, S, and P, but not necessarily in that order, that seems to do a terrible job of explaining what they do and what all their software and elements are. And I saw tech talk all over the website, or at least what I thought was tech talk. What is tech talk?
Yeah, so I would say that every industry or even every hobby has its own language and it has unique words and phrases that people use. And when you're in that industry, those words and phrases are very, very useful because they're, you know, like shorthand or code that can make communication easier, but only if you're talking to somebody who already gets it. And so you don't need to like spell everything out when you're talking because your colleagues are going to understand you. But as soon as you go outside of that industry or, you know, to different types of buyers who may not be so familiar with it, people can find it confusing. And I even have a personal story about this. So one of my hobbies is knitting. And so one day I was out and a friend complimented a sweater that I was wearing that I had knit. And I was like, oh, thank you. I said, this yarn was hand dyed by an independent local artist. So she pauses for a second. She looks at me and she says, well, that was the most hipster thing I've ever heard you say. So while you know, the jargon can make sense to people within the community and the knitters will get it, it's like it gets all pretentious to people who are outside of that community, and it could be a turnoff, you know, for people who are looking at your content. They're overloaded with all this tech talk.
I totally understand it, and just to share, my wife is a knitter, so I understood exactly what you were talking about. but as soon as we get into, you know, needle sizes and you know, are you doing that with circular? What's the stitch that you're using? Right, those are the things that you got to be on the inside to really understand, you know, the implication of what those questions are all about and what that discussion is. So, okay. So give me an example or two of the types of things that a software or a tech company might say that would be tech talk forward that might be problematic.
Yeah, any acronym could be a problem, like even within your own company. So one time I was on a call with a client and I was interviewing a few of their subject matter experts within their own company. And one of them used an acronym and the other person from a different department within the same company thought it meant something else. So if you're throwing out all these acronyms, like even people within your own company may have different definitions for them. So those could definitely be confusing, or even just throwing a bunch of like really long words, you know, next to each other. When you do that, those could be hard to read and people have to like think and like try to figure out, okay, what exactly are you talking about here? And you don't want to put up those barriers in your copy because people aren't going to try to figure it out. They're just going to be like, I'm going to look over here at this other company that's they write more clearly and I can understand what they're talking about.
So you talked a few minutes ago about the different stakeholders, and I understand the point you just made about acronyms making, you know, sense to some people, but maybe unless you know that they also use that same language, right, you don't necessarily want to use them. How do you deal with speaking to somebody who is incredibly technically savvy and is looking for that sophistication coupled with the people who are not?
Yeah. So if you know that you're talking to a technical audience and they're going to read it or, you know, you don't want to talk down to them. So in those cases, it's okay to use the language. You know, you don't want to be like what I call either marsplaining or salesplaining, which is like marketing or sales explaining. You don't want to do that. So using the right language, the right tech talk in the right place can show that you understand your audience and it could give your copy authority. But it's kind of tricky because you need to walk the line between sounding credible and then maybe like putting off the other readers who need to understand what your product does, but they're not tech people.
So are there certain places that you might include more technical language? Or, you know, is it guiding them to, you know, if you'd like more detail or the tech sheets on this, go download it, and that's where you put all the tech jargon? Or is it a different approach?
Usually I like to, if I'm writing to somebody who's earlier in the sales cycle and they're just educating them about their challenges, I might keep the tech talk to a minimum because you're going to have people coming in from all areas of the company. You might have a research assistant looking at your stuff or somebody who needs to pass the information along to their manager. So at that stage, you know, keep it minimal, but as they move through your sales funnel, and you're going to have maybe more of the technical people coming on, they're going to want to know more about the features. That's when you could get into the tech talk some more.
So based on what I heard you say, and I don't know if this is universal or this is true in the space that you tend to work in, are the initial shoppers, the person who's doing the sort of the front end research, are they typically not as technically savvy and therefore you want to speak to them, or is it a mix, or what is your experience in that?
It's a mix. You really need to know your audience, because even at the early stages, there could be different people from different parts of the company coming in and reading your content. So you really need to know who your audience is and who is doing what research when.
Okay. So that begs the question then, how do you identify who, I mean, if you're brought into a project and you're trying to work through, all right, we got to reshape the content here, and you're going and asking your client, you know, how do we know who is the early stage researcher in your particular offer? How do you understand that? What are the steps that you need to go through to be able to know who you're speaking to?
I think one of the most useful things is to do informational interviews with some of your customers and talk to them and just ask them these questions like, okay, so you're thinking about getting, you find out you have this challenge. What is the first step you take? Where do you go to get your information? Who is doing the research? What questions do you have at this point? And then as they move further along, ask them, okay, so when you're starting to, you know, narrow down the vendors and book sales calls and demos, who's involved? What do they want to know? So doing that, interviewing, you know, 5 to 10 customers could give you a lot of information that is useful when you're putting together your copy and understanding, you know, the questions people have when they're buying from you.
When you've gone through that sort of process, do you typically find reasonable consistency in the way that those questions get answered?
But then there's always, you know, somebody always throws a curveball that surprises you. So that's why it's important to go through it.
So I'm curious how you deal with that, the curveballs, like what sort of things might you discover in that sort of process? You're going down a path, you're thinking, okay, we got it. We know what we're doing. We know who we're talking to. And then something comes up. What is the type of thing that might throw things off, and how do you address that?
So you might find out that your customer has different challenges that you weren't really thinking about, or you may think that they're focused on one thing as their number one pain point, but then when they talk to you, they're going to tell you other things. And after you interview maybe 5 to 10 customers, you might start to see patterns forming, and you might see like, okay, so we thought that our customers were concerned about, you know, productivity, but what they really need help with is, you know, making sure, you know, improving like customer churn or something like that. So, you know, talk to as many customers as you can, and then find out what their core challenges are, and then address those in your copy.
And you're learning about things that are not necessarily specific to the thing that you're selling or what it does. So can you talk a little bit about how you bridge the gap between these topics that you're uncovering and where you want to ultimately lead somebody to in terms of, hey, this company, this product might be something worth exploring?
So I think what you could do is, you know, go through all your data from the interviews, and then maybe you'll get ideas based on their challenges, based on the questions that they're asking, and start to address those questions in your content. And so if you know that people are asking certain questions early on, maybe, you know, create some like free content, some blogs and some ebooks and things like that, infographics that address those challenges. And then as they move through your sales funnel, they're going to have different questions, and they're going to want to know different things. So address those points in like your brochures and your webinars and your sales demos and things like that.
You work with clients on sort of mapping a lot of this stuff out and then building it for them. And you're talking about a lot of different components here that could be developed. I was going to say that are needed to be developed, but obviously every case is different. Talk a little bit about the approach that you take to a project that you know. I guess the question that I wanted to understand is, how do you create in what you just mapped out there consistency throughout the funnel for the experience of the person who is the prospect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you definitely want to map out your funnel and get a list of those questions that they're asking and get a list of the different points that you want to cover at each stage of the funnel, and then create content around that. And it's really different for everybody, so it's hard for me to give one standard answer here.
Well, let's dive into, you know, an example. And you worked on enough projects that we don't have to reveal who the client was, but the type of thing that you may have built out, what the process was, so that a business owner who's listening can get a sense of how to approach this process themselves.
Mm-hmm. So one project I did recently was a website. And so we were speaking to three different audiences in this website. There was an IT buyer, there was a finance buyer, and there was a procurement buyer. And so we had different landing pages on the site. And we had one for the IT buyer, one for the finance buyer, one for the procurement buyer. That way we were able to speak their language, address their specific concerns, have testimonials. Like on the procurement page, we had testimonials from procurement people. We had stats and data that they would be interested in, and it was all very focused on the audience. So you definitely want to consider each audience you might have too many audiences, so you can't maybe create a page for everybody, but your core audiences, you know, have a page for them and really speak their language in it and address their concerns.
And in this case, did you then lead each of them to a next step?
Yeah, we did. We had, I think ultimately my client wanted them to get in contact for, reach out for a proof of concept. But the language that we used to guide them to the proof of concept was different, you know, for the IT person. It was, if you want to save on your IT purchases and contact us. And it was a little bit different for each of the three core audiences.
All right. I want to shift gears for a moment. In the world that you and I live in, where we're trying to convince people that the offer that we have is different from the other things that they see out there. Mm-hmm. Very often, I imagine the difference exists in that technical element, either the algorithm that we have built to be able to figure out something for you, or the sophistication of the layers of whatever. I don't know that, that you can build out in this ERP system, the ability to, track X, Y, and Z in a way that our competitors don't. Mm-hmm. That's stuff that I imagine can get very complicated.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that sort of stuff when you're talking about differentiation in something that is heavily technical?
Yeah. So one of my clients has a software product that he sells to a very traditional industry. And obviously, there's a ton of work that goes into the back end of this product, always making it better, improving the technical features in it. But his audience is not technical. So whenever somebody on the team suggests putting in more technical detail, my client is like, no, this is not a technical audience. Instead, we're going to talk about our differentiators when it comes to like customer service. We're going to talk about things like how we could, get this new technology installed like super fast when other tech companies, it would take like a year to get this kind of stuff set up. So we talk about the things that matter to them, and we kind of gloss over like the deep technical stuff because it's just not important to them. It's the technical part is how it's done, but they're more concerned about, you know, what the product is going to do for them, not necessarily the innards of how everything works.
I love the fact that that was the answer. And I was recently rereading Joe Sugarman's very famous Adweek copywriting book, where he talks about this very point, which is he recommends talking about something that is not very technical in highly technical terms, because it differentiates it from everything else, like, I don't know, an alarm clock or a watch. But talking about something that's highly technical in very basic terms, because it makes it more accessible. And I love the fact that you're talking about focusing the differentiation of something that's highly technical in an area that it's not even addressing the technical nature of the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been successful for this client going into this very traditional industry where his customers aren't technical people.
So let's take a minute or two to talk a little bit about the business that you're in, because we've referenced the work that you do for clients and some of the projects that you've worked on. Tell us about your business.
Yeah, so I am a copywriter, and I work with B2B technology companies, and I've been doing this since 2009. And actually, I have a funny story about kind of how I started, and that's kind of like related to this topic of tech talk. So years ago, before I went freelance, I was interviewing for a job at an architectural firm doing proposal writing. And I had never done anything like that previously. So I was kind of nervous about the interview. I was like, oh, I don't know anything about architecture. I have no idea how I'm gonna write about it. But the vice president who was interviewing me, he said, well, you know, we have lots of great architects in this company, and they know all the technical stuff, but we need somebody who could translate that for non-technical people, and we need a fresh perspective. And so when I was thinking about, when I launched my business in 2009, when I was thinking about naming my company, I thought about that, and then I named it Fresh Perspective, because that's why a lot of my clients come to me, and even today.
I love that. And I love the fact that when you spoke to them, they talked about translating what they do. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's very often what we find ourselves as marketers needing to do, is how do you make the connection between what the client or what the business or what the product is capable of doing and what the prospective customer out there actually cares about. And so creating a fresh perspective from the vantage point of the business to bridge that gap, to make that connection, I think is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So the types of clients that you tend to work with, I think we've talked about, are B2B tech and software companies. Is there a particular area in there that you tend to specialize?
Pretty much all over the place. I have a lot of SaaS clients, a lot of IT managed services, AI asset management, even telecommunications. So it's kind of all over the tech spectrum.
And there was a bunch of jargon in there. For those of you who understood what Rachel just said, then you know if you're a candidate to work with her. If folks are interested in learning more about the services you provide and how you can help them, where can they find out more?
Yeah, they can go to my website. It's www.freshperspectivewriting.com.
Freshperspectivewriting.com. Perfect. Well, Rachel Foster, thank you so much for hanging out and helping translate some of this tech speak in a way that we can understand how to make our businesses more accessible for the people we're trying to help.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the examples covered, a broad range of industries there. And I know I talked about tech companies a lot just because that's who I work with. But it definitely, every industry has their own language. And you just want to make sure that your writing is inclusive to everybody who's going to be, looking at your product or service.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the insight and the education. And thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invite.
Indeed. Folks, you have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from the conversation you just heard, please share this with them. Until next time, my name's David Baer. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.